Welcome back to Things That People Don't Want to Talk About, including this conversation. This is Paul Richmond, and once again, I'm here with Greg Allen, although this time our location is on Amherst Island, a little island off of Kingston, Ontario. And Greg has an affiliation with this island, and today I'm going to be speaking with him a little bit about the history of the island, and then we're going to progress to what we can do as humankind in order to help bring our society together and helping to repair the damage that mankind has done thus far. Greg, I want to thank you very much for being here and for welcoming me to this island, which you have lived on and have an interaction with. Thank you very much for, again, allowing me to further this discussion.
Thank you, Paul. This is a land that I am attached to. It was many years ago, in 1973, that I brought my family to this island. There was a group of people living here that were forming an intentional community, and they were looking for someone who was interested in appropriate technology to live and work with them. So it's nice to be back on this place, and hope I will be able to return one day for good.
It is beautiful, absolutely beautiful. We're sitting, believe it or not, on a, what would you call this contraption?
It's a one-hole John. It's an important piece of technology, actually.
And when you lived on the island, did you have this particular one-hole John, as you call it?
Well, toilets were an important issue and remain so to this day. Compost toilets are the most elegant way of dealing with our human waste, or in nature, no waste exists, it's food. In the case of a composting toilet, you're taking the nutrients that you've taken in and reprocessing them into soil again. So the cycle is continued in that fashion.
And this particular device that we're sitting on does that activity?
Yes. Nature does it all the time, and when we work with it, the job becomes quite easy. The way that we currently do it, by flushing the toilet and running it through a large network of pipes down to a sewage treatment plant with lots of energy and chemical content to process those wastes, we throw out the wastes and dump relatively contaminated water into our waterways.
How deep would you have to dig the hole in order to get the activity that you spoke of with getting those wastes, you know, it turns into food because it goes through the ground. How deep would you have to dig the hole? Is there a recommended depth?
Well, usually it's a vessel, and people as small as a bucket have devised composting systems that work quite effectively at rendering feces to humus.
When you were living on the island back in the early 70s, in your community, as a leader that they were looking for, what ideas did you present that they had not thought of before in order to make the community a better place for themselves?
Well, carrying on the waste theme, that was one of the issues that we needed to deal with, was the number of people in the farmhouse meant that the septic tank no longer sufficed. So we created a system called a lagoon that provided a way of processing it naturally, and the water from that then circulated to the orchard under the surface of the ground and fed the trees.
What other actions did you have the community take outside of dealing with their waste in terms of, let's say, food growth, energy production? Mm-hmm. What things did you do or did you suggest for the community to be able to take those actions? And I guess you were leading yourselves towards self-sufficiency.
Mm-hmm. We were all participant in a variety of ways of building our shelters, growing our own food, dealing with our waste, harvesting rainwater. The many things that we began in those days were in many directions. The house that you're staying at was made of straw bales. It was constructed of materials that were on hand. Stones from the island formed the fireplace that provided the central heating hearth. Compost toilets were built in. There was a greenhouse in the home that treated the water as well as grew winter greens. All of this was done in a relatively inexpensive fashion and yet yielded so much more than our current housing forms.
Yes, I am staying at that location in that home.
Well, some of the folks that lived in the community built their own places. Another home, which has been off the grid for 30 years, used a small wind turbine for its limited amount of power needs, now using photovoltaics to do that. There's a cistern that is used for the water. Many of the early impulses have been proven quite successful and in fact have regained an enthusiasm in modern buildings today.
If you go through that list again, there was two words that you said that I've never heard of before.
Photovoltaics?
Yes.
A technology that was developed in those missions to space, which is now having a lot of successful application particularly in Europe and Japan, technology called photovoltaics. It converts sunlight directly into electricity. We've got lots of little devices around that use them, but to an increasing extent are becoming part of the skin of our buildings that make our buildings net energy generators.
Well, that's a forward-thinking modality.
Mm-hmm.
What could people do today if they live in an urban center, drawing from your experiences as to what you've done on Amherst Island, could they possibly entail to think about or educate themselves on or even possibly take action on in terms of making their own living spaces self-sufficient?
One of the biggest things that we'll have to contend with is the vast amounts of energy we use for heating our homes, cooling our homes, heating our hot water, and powering our gadgets and lights. There are examples of houses. In the city of Toronto, for example, there is a project called the Healthy House, which was the size of a garage lot and was able to generate all its own drinking water and its power from the construction of the home itself. What people can do is to start looking at improving the building envelope, that is the insulative layer around us. We've typically had a very poor coat on our homes and windows that were substandard. What we can use today can reduce our heating loads to negligible amounts. These are using high-performance windows, using passive solar heating. By facing our windows south, we not only enjoy lots of bright sunlight, we get free heating and can grow house plants that can provide winter greens.
I'm getting a sense that there are things people can do in their own living space. Specifically, we spoke about rooftop gardens. Could you give us some insight about rooftop gardens?
One of the most underutilized aspects of real estate in cities are the rooftops themselves, which are in fact the receivers of much of the energy from the world at large. The sunlight provides opportunity to produce living environments on our roofs, and those gardens can be seen as urban agriculture. They can be seen as water purifiers. Rainwater that is filtered through the soils generates a high quality spring water that is free for the taking. It cools the home as well as cools the local neighborhood. It purifies the air, provides habitat, and provides a pleasurable way to experience urban environments that are relatively devoid of nature.